that was famous as a place of movie scenes. Noise was always loud, there were sirens all around in the streets of me. I can make it here, I can make it anywhere, that's what they say. See my face in lights, on my name, my marquee's bound down on Broadway. Even if it ain't all it seems, I got a pocket full of dreams, baby, I'm from New York. Concrete jungle where dreams are made of. There's nothing you can do.
You are listening to Alicia Keys, New York, which I'm pretty confident you already knew. But it is a great song. Obviously not the remix version with Jay-Z. That may or may not appear later in the episode. And look, to be honest, the reason I've picked this one, it's not very clever. It's not one of the most subtle connections we've ever made. It basically, our guest this episode is the wonderful Liz Miao from New York. She's a professional comedian, touring comedian, who's in Australia at the moment. She's just come through an Asian leg of a tour. She's come to Australia. She's doing a bunch of shows in Sydney and has some shows coming up in Melbourne and Brisbane. And you guys should absolutely go and check her out because she's amazing. She's very funny. I saw her in New York and I've been a fan of hers ever since. Anyway, long-term listeners of the show would recognize the name because I have sampled her comedy on the show before. She was actually in the first episode. So if you want to go back and have a listen to that one, you can hear some of her stand-up from that. Feel free. I'd just like to say before we get into it that I'd really like to thank like long-term listeners who have stuck with us for a while, who continuously come back. Like, I know it's a big commitment sticking to a particular podcast, finding time in the day or the week or the month to sit down with us and give us your time and your effort and to allow us to distract you from a long commute or a boring day at work or whatever it is that you need us to get you through. But we appreciate your time and we appreciate your support. We genuinely do. A couple of small things, if you could help us in a couple of different ways. Maybe if you don't have any money, you can support us on iTunes or on any of the podcast aggregates, you know, by rating us and sending, giving us a nice rating, some nice comments. Tell people what you think of us and tell them that it's worth their time and helps us appear in the podcast ratings. The algorithm helps all the algorithm show us, and then that brings more people into our listenership, and that means there's more people for you to talk to about this podcast if you enjoy listening to us. If you can afford to, and if you're in the particular cities, I'm going on tour. I'm going to be at Fringe World in Perth on the 15th, the 16th, and the 17th doing my solo show. It's a storytelling show titled I Got Bit by a Monkey Once. And doing two live podcasts for Just for Funny, the guests for which are going to be great. So I think there's going to be some strong live shows. So if you could come out, and that's like realistically, that's the best way to support us, to support this podcast. If you want more of this podcast, or if you want more of the live shows, or if you want more of anything to do with us, realistically, that's the best way to do it because that allows us the financial stability to do more festivals and to travel around and to appear in more cities and to basically to go do our day jobs slightly less so that I have more time to edit these things because I do all the editing myself, as you could probably tell by the times where I've messed it up. And on top of Fringe World, I'll be at the Adelaide Fringe from the 19th to the 24th doing the solo show I Got Bit by a Monkey Once and one Just for Funny live podcast on, I think, either the 23rd or the 24th. I will have to check that. But if you go to either of those, the Fringe World or the Adelaide Fringe website, and search my name, Matt Harvey, the shows will pop up. And you can see what they are. The Just for Funny shows are very cheap. They're only $5 tickets. So please, please, please come out. I'd really appreciate you coming out and just seeing the live format, being in the room. It's a lot of fun. I really enjoy doing the live shows, and I think the audiences who come in and the guests who come in end up having a really good time. And I'd like to be able to do it more. To be honest, I'd really like to be able to do it more. And the only way that's going to happen is if you guys come on out and support us. But we're going to finish the remainder of this song before I start the episode. Please enjoy, and I will see you on the other side.
Phenomenal seal, but I've enjoyed my time there. So you're doing the store, right? The comedy store?
Yeah, so I've been doing like short sets there and places that are affiliated with it and some rooms, and then I headline there on Saturday.
Oh, nice, yeah, that's great. And you're doing a full hour, aren't you? Like, you're like trialing a new show or trialing a new hour or something? It's got a title. It's at least got a title.
It's an hour, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's really exciting. Cool. I'd love to have caught you in Melbourne, but like I said, I'll be in Adelaide because it's Fringe Fest, Adelaide Fringe. So that's sort of the big time for most performers in Australia is doing festival work. So I've got to...
That's what I've noticed spread overseas is the festivals are a big deal to everybody. We have the Montreal Comedy Festival, which clearly isn't even ours, it's Canada's, but they've taken a lot of Americans, homeless festivalists, Americans. We used to have Aspen Comedy Festival like 12 years ago that was kind of on par with the ability to kind of have upward motion in your career, but it failed.
You say that, but then you've got like a secure club system where you can sort of actually travel about and actually
make
money. So, like, I don't know.
Yeah, that's what I pretty much learned through talking to people is that the festivals are the only real avenue you guys have to becoming self-sufficient in comedy, unlike. Like you said, we're able to do the clubs throughout the country.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, every state here has, like, a comedy store or some equivalent, but the journey to getting up there, like, just to get people to see you and recognize you and be able to put you on in a night where you can actually get paid, and it's not, you're not losing money to go and do a set over there is just ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, I'm never even at, I'm gonna say never, but like very rarely at the Comics Lounge, and that's only a few suburbs away from where I live.
Yeah, yeah, no, I get that. I mean, even in New York, it's taken a long time to get the clubs to recognize you and get work there. I mean, we're just very oversaturated with comics.
Be a big part of it, I guess, is like everyone goes to New York to make it, you know, because the opportunity exists, but then because the opportunity exists, everyone's over there trying to make it happen for them. I feel that.
Absolutely.
How have you found... you went through, like, Singapore and different parts of Asia? How'd you find that?
It was great. I loved it. I've never been to all the countries I went to. I went to Singapore, Philippines, Malaysia, and Thailand. And I had never been, and I didn't know what to expect. I had worked with the booker in Singapore because he had booked me in Pakistan in April. But, you know, I kind of joked on stage. I was kind of like, I don't know if I should be allowed in most countries. I was like, I'm not really scared to fly, but I am scared immigration is going to ask me to point to where I'm going to on a map. And I wouldn't be able to do that for most places I go to. So I was a lot more worried about those shows than I was for Australia. I don't know if it's because, you know, everybody's first language is English, or, you know, you guys just look like the taller version of us. I was less scared about my stuff translating here culturally than I was over in Asia, and Asia ended up being surprisingly great. Like, being a tourist there was really, really fun and beautiful and interesting, and then the shows, some shows were like 70% locals, and some shows were about 50-50 expat locals. So all around, it was a surprisingly really great experience.
Yeah, no, I haven't performed in Asia, but I spent some time in Malaysia just traveling. After the stupidest choice. So like, I'd just gone through like a big breakup, and then two offers came my way, and it was like, oh, you can come to this rural town in Adelaide, or you can come to Malaysia. So I was like, oh, well, what better place to avoid everything that I've ever known and, you know, not be reminded of anything ever is if I go to this foreign country where all the ideals are different and everything's sort of different and nobody looks like me and I won't be sort of reminded of anyone. But that's in and of itself is part of the problem, because like the only reason that I'm there is because of this real life.
I've realized more and more, like, I lean on social media as, like, a friend. I find, like, I was in Taiwan with my boyfriend, so, you know, I would take pictures and he'd be there and we'd be talking or whatever, but, like, I'm by myself, like, 70% of the year, and... I use Insta stories as to be like, I saw a cat! Oh, he's street art! Hey, guys, I ate food! Like, I mean, my family isn't very, like, they're not the kind of people that, I mean, half the time they don't even know where I am in the world, so, you know, it's through my Insta stories that my mom even knows I'm alive half the time. I mean, I could be like, hey, mom, I'm alive, but she'd be like, cool, so I don't really see the need to keep her in the loop.
Yeah.
But I've had... so many fans be like, be safe, and I'm like, my mom doesn't think it's a problem, you guys shouldn't think it's a problem, we're all fine with it, it's all gonna be fine.
Yeah.
I don't really talk to strangers except for on the internet, so I think I'm killing it.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, you can keep that distance, and if...
Yeah.
Oh, no, like, I get that a bit, you know, like, I don't tour anywhere near as much as, like, 70% of the year, that's a huge percentage. And
it's a stupid percentage.
I mean,
it's just stupid.
You've got to do what you've got to do to make it work. I mean, it seems to be translating to being seen and being heard and sort of being able to get around a bit, like...
I'm grateful. I wish I had more control.
No, I
know. I think that would be my next step is being able to.
When you say
control. Say no. So, like, for example, like, I'm in Australia for a month, not fully because I want to, but because financially it makes more sense.
Yeah.
So, the price of the ticket and the longer I'm here, the more money I can make, and I can take advantage of the flight I paid for.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, you do get to a point eventually where you're just in a city a night or two nights. You know what I mean? Like, or for two shows. Like, I'm not saying I'm not grateful to be here for 2 weeks and to be in Australia for a month, but, you know, the dream is to be able to kind of drop in, do my thing, and leave. And if I stay longer, it's to be on a vacation, not to,
not to be work
at night. Yeah.
No, I totally understand that. I mean, do you have, like, you've got small gaps from what I've seen of your schedule. Are you, like, filling it in, or is that just rest time?
So even here in Sydney, I had 3 days off, and I got offered a bunch of gigs, so I took them.
Yeah,
and those were all paid, so I was like, yeah, I'll make more money. And then Melbourne, there's just like some fun shows, like hip shows that are packed and really good. And it's hard to try new material when you're being paid, so to get gigs where I'm not being paid and they're a good audience and to be able to around and stuff, like, so Melbourne, I filled in my off days with just fun shows.
See,
when I'm on the road, I don't really completely see the need to take time off. Like, as soon as I get back from Australia, I'll sleep for like 3 days and then I'll start again.
Well, I mean, I guess when you're at home though, you're at home, like, it's home is work, you know, like that.
Yeah.
That makes more sense to me that you would be straight back into it, whereas here I try to do this when I'm interstate, and I try to do this when I'm around. Like, when I was in Tasmania just before you were, because they had just started a festival there, and I was like, I'll try myself out there and see how that goes, and see if I can get a little name for myself in Tasmania, and hopefully I'll be able to hook up with the clubs in Tasmania. But happened to fall over the anniversary of my partner, and so she came with me, and we tried to fill in the gaps, like, in between the, like, trying to promote the festival show and trying to, like, actually turn it into a working vacation. It didn't really pan out too much in the, in the work direction, because, like, I only had one show, and I basically arrived, did a show, and then was like, oh, I guess I've got spare time.
But that's just a small scene. I think small scenes are always going to be a challenge. Like, even the people that live there, I talked to them, like, they weren't able to get consistent work. You know what I mean? Like, when it's such a small... And then even when I was reaching out about work, like, one booker was like, if you work with this booker, you can't work with me. And I'm just like, well, that seems problematic if you live there.
Even that small, like, how is it supposed to be sustainable? Like, I don't understand how any of them expect to develop as clubs if they're like, I won't work with people who have worked with that person.
Yeah. It
doesn't make sense to me. Ah, Australia. Get shit together. how did you find Tasmania though? Like, was it just all?
I did. They were little reserved, I thought, as an audience. And I ended up having two hecklers. One was from South Africa, so it doesn't mean anything for Tasmania, just, you know, think about who you let into your areas. And then, I don't know where the other guy was from, but they were in the front row, and there was, like, five of them, they were all together, and these two girls, like, were, like, having a fight next to the stage before the opener was going on, and I even, like, turned to the manager, and I was like, could we, like, handle that? Like, why are they having, like, a fight next to the stage before, like, this guy's being announced? And then they kept getting up, like, the people that are in the front row, and, like, there's probably about, like, 60, 70 people, it's not a big club, they just kept getting up in the middle of people's jokes, in the middle of people's sets. It was, like, distracting and also, like, whatever, but they were, like, really encouraging, but then they were loud, and they were clapping for no reason, and they were shouting stuff out. So I ended up having two hecklers that I just, like, there's all these pictures of me, like, squatting down, talking to them like they're a young child. Because my approach, I have two approaches. One approach is like my therapist to be like, why did you think that was a good idea? Like, let's break that down. Or my other approach when I just can't get through to them is to yell at them, like my siblings, and be like, we have the same genetics. You can't be that much dumber. Like, you can't. Like, I just don't believe that you're that much dumber. Like, we're all people of the world. Like, so I would say it was a combination. I started as a therapist, and I ended up yelling at them like family. And, like, the audience responded to it, and they were completely on my side, because they had been interrupting all the comedians before me. But it's so hard to do 45 minutes when somebody's, like, shouting stuff out and, like, learning punchlines and, like, asking questions. And I was just texting my friend the other day because she had a deal with, like, a heckler in New York. And she was like, I'm just so tired of it. And I was like, this doesn't happen during plays. Like, do we need to charge $100 for somebody to respect what we do enough to not shout out and give suggestions? Even when they're being encouraging, I don't think they understand, like, how offensively awful they're being.
No, it doesn't seem to get across. Like, the ones who are being encouraging, or even the ones who aren't, sometimes think that they're helping. So I remember, like, speaking to people, and they're like, no, it's part of it. It's part of the show. It's how we do it. No.
But it's just like, why is it your one time being here makes you an expert over my 15 years of doing it nightly? Like, it's just like, nobody else would go up to a carpenter and be like, so you're going to use that tool? That's interesting. Maybe have you thought of using that tool? Like, you know what I mean? Like, no other place are you giving people suggestions. But it just shows, like, how little, like, people think they can do what you're doing. Like, nobody thinks that there's any expertise or ability attached to it.
I think it comes with, because the comes with the idea of there's a prestigious history to theater. See, the Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, because it just came to Melbourne, right? And it was a 40-something degree day, and there was no way I was overdressing for anything. But there were still people in full, like, suits and showing up and then there was the other side of it, you know, people in their wizard outfits with their long cloaks and wands and scarves, and I'm like, it's 40 degrees, guys, you can't, like, what are you doing? I don't know why you're committed to either one or the other, but I don't know, but there is that.
It's also like, nobody's gonna see you, you're in the dark, you're literally in the dark watching somebody else do something.
No one's paying that much attention, except for the 3 seconds before you go in, where someone's like, why? And that's the only thing that they think about you, is why? It's a strange choice. I don't understand it at all. But that, yeah, I think that you're right. I think that is where the idea of the heckler comes from, because everyone thinks that everyone can make a joke, but everyone can't perform a joke, you know, and I don't think that they understand that that's the fundamental difference between the funny guy in the lunchroom and a stand-up comedian, is that it crafting a joke is something, whereas, like, anyone can make a quick quip and you might land it well, and that doesn't even, it's not even guaranteed. But because they just...
There's also the difference between being in a group of people that you know everything about and they know everything about you, and being in front of a group of people you know nothing about. They're diverse in all shapes and sizes and ages and religions and colors and backgrounds and nationalities, that you're like, yeah, you might be able to make your friend Frank laugh that you've known since middle school, This is different, and it takes a while. And as somebody that's been doing it forever, it often doesn't go well, and there's tactics to that as well. Like, It does get disappointing after a while to be like, oh, not nobody, but a fair amount of people don't think there's any real skill to what you do. I'm not saying what I do is important. I don't save lives. I don't help anybody. I'm not a good person. Like, that I agree with. But, like, it does take skill to do this very frivolous, not important job. And I would like people to acknowledge it.
Yeah, no, I think there are people who are working towards trying to shape the image, like Daniel Kitson. Do you know Daniel Kitson, or do you know of Daniel Kitson?
I feel like I've heard his name, but I don't know his work.
he's a UK comedian who, last time he came here for the comedy festival, he didn't do any night shows. He was like, if you can appreciate what I do at 7 o'clock at night, then you can appreciate what I do at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And he just like did this run of shows at like a unconventional times. And he does real, but he does, he came with a theater show, but he also came with a straight stand up show that was a work in progress for Edinburgh. So, for us, you know, the comedy festival is the biggest event of the year, but for him, you know, it's just practice for Edinburgh, which is, you know, the biggest arts festival in the world. And I think he's trying to push what stand-up is and how people respond to it. He's a really interesting guy. If you ever get a chance to check out some of his work, I'd recommend him. I did happen to catch that run, and it was, he does some fascinating stuff, and I think he's trying to shape the idea of stand-up, at least in people's minds, because when he was real open about that, he was just like, no, like, why should you have to be drunk on a Friday afternoon to enjoy this?
I don't think I am for drunk people. Like, I tell stories. You need to be somewhat aware and awake and able to put thoughts together. So, like, I do late shows in the city. I mean, when I did the Fringe Festival in Edinburgh, I got booked for a couple of 2 a.m. shows, and I was like, I haven't done 2 a.m. shows since I started. And they ended up going well, and I was worried just because of the festival vibe and just English people drinking in general, and then I'm a storyteller, that it wasn't going to go well. And they ended up actually, I can be aggressive and I can make myself heard if need be, and they ended up being actually pretty good shows. But while I can do it, I feel most comfortable probably in a situation where people are here to see a show, and they paid money, and they're ready to pay attention, and they're not more concerned about the bartender, you know, or the waitress bringing around their drink as they are. You know what I mean? Like, sometimes it's treated as a bar that happens to have a show rather than a show that happens to serve alcohol.
There's a lot of places in Melbourne that it is just surprise comedy. Like, the room's just there, it's a bar, and then suddenly they're like, hey, there's gonna be comedy in 20 minutes, and they're like, what? Hang on, what? So that's a feeling that I know well. But I think that's what I like about festival environments, is that it is people who are aware that they're coming to a show, even if it's a straight stand-up show, and the show I'm touring at the moment is also a storytelling show, so that helps me, because I can shape it a bit, and I can sell it as, you know, this is stories, and, you know, it's not laugh a minute, but there is laughs, and there is moments where you're going to need to listen, so, you know, come and sit down with me and don't be shit, and just listen when you need to listen and respond appropriately. But like, that helps, I think, a little bit to build it around a festival environment in that one and only sense, because then you're competing against, you know, if it's a comedy festival in Melbourne, it's like 600-700 shows, and that's brutal. It's a tough environment to just get noticed if you're not on TV or if you're not someone that people know.
Yeah, I mean, the Fringe Festival is the same. I mean, you're just a million shows, and you're competing with all of them, and you know, nothing makes you feel like a small ant than these festivals.
Yeah.
It's like, like, you get one review and you're just like, oh yeah, oh no, still doesn't mean anything, cool. Still a nobody.
Yeah.
Forgot.
Thought I'd done something for a second there. Nope, I'll go back.
Sorry, everybody, I'm gonna make my own ant hole over here, and you can visit if you'd like.
Yeah,
I have snacks.
Very sugary snacks, come on in. Come on.
Yeah, no, I definitely stole it to Tootsie Roll, and I brought it back, and it's for everybody now. We're gonna split it.
Yeah.
It's like tapas.
How'd you find Edinburgh? Like, did you bring a whole show over there, or was it there?
I did. I started going over to the UK, like, 6 years ago. A friend of mine, I'd always wanted to go. Like, I noticed very early, he's an older, a ton of tourists in New York, I noticed very early in my career that it was English people that would come up to me and just tell me how great I was.
Right.
And I was like, And you know, when you're young and nobody's telling you how great you are, you're like, maybe I just was born in the wrong place.
Yeah.
So I very quickly was trying to figure out how to get to London. And everything I was told was like, you're going to, the first time around to get, you know, get out there, you're going to have to, you know, either lose money or break even. And so I was, you know, not in a place, I was just barely surviving as a human. So I just wasn't in a place to go anywhere and lose money. So it wasn't until about 6 years ago that I had a friend that had moved there for work. And then my girlfriend, my friend Maria, who I had started with, she was touring, doing a military tour, and she had an old roommate and wanted to go to London, and she basically was like, do you want to stay with your friend Sam? I'll stay with my friend Olivia, and we'll try to do a week there. So I ended up booking, like, a fair amount of paid stuff, using, like, frequent flyer miles, staying on my friend's couch, getting bookers to come out and see me, and through that week, I, like, broke even, did the Comics Comic, or the Comedians Comedian podcast, which actually was the biggest thing I could have done. I got, like, my name out there just on that podcast alone.
That's great.
Yeah, and this was sweet. It was really helpful. I did a couple other podcasts. I did a bunch of shows, and then I had this booker from Jongos, which is not even a club anymore, come out and see my friend Maria, and she booked both of us for a bunch of weekends, like, 8 months later. So then 8 months later, I did that, and I ended up booking a solid month and a half tour all throughout Europe. And so every time I came back every 6 to 8 months, I would make money, and I would make an impression that basically everything I learned over the course of the next 2.5 years was, if I want to get an agent, if I want to get on TV, if I want to be headlining the clubs as opposed to featuring or just only headlining these little one-nighters, I need to go to the Fringe Festival. So I started gathering information from all the comics I had met in the U.S. and overseas that had done it, and my hour was pretty much finished, and I ended up doing the Fringe Festival. I ended up doing a 3.5 month tour, which the last month was the Fringe Festival, which was both really smart and really dumb, because most people get sick the last week of the Fringe Festival. I got sick the third day and almost lost my voice, because I had been touring nonstop and was just really tired and really sick. And, like, by the last week of the Fringe Festival, I mean, it was a great experience and an awful experience all tied into one. Like, I don't regret it. I'm happy I did it. I got an agent from it. You know, I'm here. I'm in Australia because I have a UK agent that books me for this. I've met some great people, and I now am, like, pretty much in the UK 2 to 3 times a year. But it's, like, it's one of those grueling festivals that I remember the last week. I wasn't really doing my hour as much as I was reciting it or the robot. And I remember, to make myself feel better, because it had been 3.5 months, I was, like, I just kept packing my suitcase every day and just adding stuff to it. And, like, I was just, like, people were like, hey, you want to go out? And I go, no, I just want to be by my stuff so that I can be ready to go. Like, I was just like,
there it is.
Yeah.
Right
there. And I was just so checked out. And, like, it was great. And I met so many incredible people, some of my best friends. It was, like, you know, it was like a giant summer camp. And I don't drink, so, like, I wasn't even, those people that, like, do their show hungover every day, and I wasn't. I was just a general tired.
I couldn't even imagine doing a festival on hangovers. I stopped drinking before performing years ago, and that, I've, one of the greatest decisions I've ever made.
Oh, yeah. I mean, half the community is split in New York of people that are sober because they did it too much, and people that have yet to get the message.
Community.
They'll get that, or they'll die. I mean, that's the number one killer of most comedians is either suicide or suicide to drugs. Like, we're not the healthiest bunch. But, like, I quit drinking. I was never a big drinker to begin with, but I quit because of stomach issues. And, I mean, I just feel better. Like, I just feel better. And it's nice. The few times that I would drink was always, like, social pressure. I'll have a beer or whatever. And now I don't even have that. So I'm just like, I mean, if you want to buy me candy, I'll take that. I'm also, like, in New York, especially when you do rooms and you're a younger comic, you get paid in drink tickets, yeah. And I'm, like, the drink ticket fairy. Like, I mean, I've made so many, I have people that, like, follow me around because I'm just giving away drink tickets. It's made me well-liked. I'm not fun to hang out with, but I am very charitable with my drink tickets. Her stories are so boring. You know, when you're drunk, offer drink tickets, it's worth it.
Yeah. I've only ever traveled through New York. I've never performed in New York.
In what sense? Just to do shows or to make it there? I mean, it's its own beast.
It is, yeah. I guess doing shows is probably what anyone who listens to this is probably mostly interested in.
I'm always trying to help out young comics that come into the city, whether it's to visit or move there and from all over the country and world, just because it is. It's hard for people that live there to break in or start there to break in, let alone coming from another state and not knowing anybody. And I was just talking to a young comic that was that been there for 3 months, and she told a story about a horrible booker there, and I knew who she was talking about, so it just made it all the more relevant and funny. But it's a beast. It's really hard to navigate. It's really hard. It's like, I mean, in the beginning, we're just doing open mics, and they're not good. They're not great. There's a lot of shitty ones. There's some good ones. I think Laughing Buddha, I have not personally done any of them, but I know a lot of comics that have done them, and they have a more supportive vibe, and there's an audience, and it's a helpful situation. Yeah, and it's hard in New York City because there's so many independent shows at bars that, you know, if you were to go to Boston or D.C. or Chicago and go to an open mic, it would actually be a good show. But in New York, there's not a lot of good open mics because we are so saturated with shows and clubs and comedians that it takes away the reserve from that first level. So really, most visiting comics, but I'm not saying it's not worth doing. I mean, I even tell young comics, like, they're like, how do I get into this club? And they're like, what are you doing, man? Like, you can't just skip steps, and you actually do yourself a great disservice as both a comedian and a person of the community to skip steps. You're going to make your biggest allies and best friends and your ways of moving forward in the open mic scene. Everybody I know, work with, friends with, recommends me for, opens for, I open for, like, everybody down the list I met in those first couple of years when we were garbage comics that didn't know what we were doing, because sometimes you need another garbage person to build up with and talk to and vent to. I mean, the most annoying thing about young comics is they're, like, not just trying to figure out the scene, they're trying to figure out what's funny, and eventually you don't really need that on both parts, and so I sometimes, like, I like helping out young comics, but they start to dissect stuff in a way where I'm like, you're trying to solve problems that I could tell you the solution, and you're not going to listen. Like a parent, you're not going to listen even though I know, so why don't you go work it out with somebody else that doesn't know, and you guys can figure it out together.
That's reasonable. Like, some people just need to do it and then fail and be like, oh, she was right. And I should have listened.
But I think every comic does. I don't even think it's some people. I think everybody grows at different rates, and I've been a very slow, bad learner and grower myself. So it's always taken me a lot longer to get to where everybody seems to just get pretty naturally. But I think there's so much value to starting at the bottom and working your way up. And some people will get out of the open mic scene in New York in 2 years, some will get out in 4 years, some will get out in 6 years, and some will never get out. Like, it's everybody's different. But New York, unfortunately, people stay in the open mic scene a lot longer. But then the open mic scene can lean to help you get into like the bar scene and just independently book shows and doing spots there, which can often feel a little bit like a slightly better open mic, but then there's a lot of great shows. And then from there, it can help you get into the clubs. The clubs, truthfully, it's not like they pay that much money. It's not like they're really getting seen or booked out of the clubs anymore like you used to. You actually get more attention from some of these hip one-off bar shows than you do the club scene. But the club scene is still kind of revered.
Yeah.
And then really, how I've made my living is leaving. I mean, I travel the country and the world, and it's made me a stronger comic. It's made me believe in myself. Like, I mean, the shows here in Sydney have been phenomenal. Like, they've just been so good that I was joking with my boyfriend where I was just like, I think I might be all right at this. Like, New York just, it's, there's, you could throw a rock and hit a brilliant comedian. It is overly saturated with comedians, but it's also saturated with brilliant writers and hardworking comics and people that are getting attention and a lot that aren't. Like, there's so many good comics, and even with all the stage time we have, there's still not enough for people to make a living out of it or reach whatever level of success they're trying to attain. That leaving has been both how I make my living, but it is also how I've earned my self-esteem, because while New York City has made me a great writer and a good comic, leaving has made me realize that I did it. And I think if I never left as much as I have and worked hard to sustain myself outside of the city, I think I would have quit thinking I wasn't good enough, because the city can make you feel that way. It's almost like how a family can make you feel like you suck, and then you meet other people and you're like, I'm actually not that bad. I don't know why everybody's mean to me at home. I'm like, just because I didn't do the dishes doesn't mean I'm worthless.
Yeah, no, that's a great analogy. I like that. Yeah, I mean, I guess it's that same thing. You know, get out into the world and meet people who, you know, who work with you, who fit your model of life. It's more than just what mum said I didn't do. And I think that's pretty solid advice. Say that I agree that getting out, like, I'm traveling a lot more across Australia, and I would find experiences, because you need your work to translate. Like, it's all good and well to be able to make people from a specific area. Like, so if I'm from Melbourne, I can make jokes about Melbourne all day, but it doesn't matter if it doesn't play when I travel. If I'm going to go to festivals, it needs to be able to play. I can't make tram jokes all day about the small niche things that really don't matter that much outside of Melbourne City. Like, I got to hone my skill as a performer and hone my skill as a writer and sort of open up to everyone and open up to all those other people.
Yeah, and I think you can go too far and water yourself down too much and just be a person that borderline makes sounds at people and goes like, you remember the 90s? Like, I think you can go too far into... I mean, that happens to a lot of guys that become like road dogs in the U.S. and they're just like in middle America and they're just doing whatever it can to survive, and it means watering down their jokes or dumbing down their jokes.
Right. Yeah.
So I'm aware of that as well. Like, I want to still say something. I still want to be myself. I still want to be unique and thoughtful, but I also want to hit as many people as I can while doing that. I'm not going to hit everybody because I'm not for everybody, but I do think what I'm fortunate that not I've learned as an American comedian traveling the world is it feels like Europe and Australia and parts of Asia have taken so much American television and movies that my cultural references don't really throw people off as much as your cultural references would. So I can say Marvel movies, which we make all of them, but you know what they are. I can say high school, which might not be how you guys do school, and you know what it is because every movie is about high school. Rather than like my UK buddy came to New York and he was doing shows, and I helped him get on a bunch of shows, and he kept talking about squash, like the stuff that you dilute for drinks, and I was like, Alistair, nobody knows what the fuck that is, just say juice. And he goes, no, I think you get it. I was like, no, you don't. I didn't know what that was until like 3 years into going to the UK, and I still don't fully get what it is. Just say juice. I was like, the accent's weird already, and when you're saying weird words, I think you're talking about a vegetable. Just fucking say juice.
When you drop squash there, I did automatically assume the fruit, and
yeah.
So I feel like that's good advice on your behalf.
Yeah, he opened for me at a show, and a couple of people were like, yeah, I didn't know what that was, and it's like, now I'm explaining his jokes to people, I was just like, don't listen.
No, I get that. I think possibly the number one export out of America is culture. In that TV.
Which is so funny, because I don't even think we have culture. I think, like, I even say when people are like, oh, I want to visit the U.S., where should I go? And I'm like, just go to San Francisco. Like, it's like the only culture we have. Like, it's pretty, it's interesting, people are doing stuff, it's like, there's trees, like, you know, when I saw gay people there, like, just go to San Francisco, nothing else. And maybe like Denver, because it's pretty, but like, I now know from leaving that we have a culture, but it's like a shitty one, and I feel bad about it. We got kangaroos. All right, we'll save the kangaroos. They're just like giant rats. And I was like, they're so cute. And we're like, we're actively trying to kill them. It's really good. I tried it in Tasmania. Yeah, it's delicious. And they also, I feel like their personalities are kind of assholes, so, you know, might as well. What? I forget to see. That's how moose are in Alaska, like, they'll just be on your front lawn, and I was like, I would love to, like, just be walking out, there's like a giant moose, and like, almost like a cat trying to shoo it away. Like, come on, you're blocking the driveway. You don't take a nap. I told you, Gary, don't take a nap in our goddamn driveway. We have to go to soccer practice.
But you have to go out.
Bullshit.
We just walked out to get in the car to go home, and there was just this massive kangaroo just chilling in her front yard, and we were just like, "Oh, hello."
Hey. Yeah. Assholes. Yeah, no, I've seen videos. Beating up dogs. Yeah.
Having a transfer student for... Wow. what are you doing?
Yeah.
Have you never heard of them just mauling people and kicking them to death? It's insane. But they've got that reputation.
Well, I was in... Yeah, no, I've watched... I've prepared. I watched all the videos.
Good.
So
that your partner is Australian, I assume?
He's not Australian. He actually... He grew up in New York. His dad... is also from New York, but he moved to Tasmania 15 years ago for just a 6-month job, and then that turned into 15 years, and now he lives there.
Well, that's an time to
so,
fill you in on the...
Yeah, so he's he goes out there at least once a year.
Oh,
nice. Yeah, so he's the one that's, everything he's told me has also been helpful. But it is kind of funny, like, I'm obsessed with animals. Just my parents are veterinarians, so I have a lot of jokes about animals, and my Instagram is all cat pictures. I mean, I actively tell people not to follow me. When I was in Malaysia, I went to the Batu Caves in KL, and I didn't know there was going to be monkeys there. And so you would have thought I was hired by National Geographic. Like, I was just like, my phone is all monkey pictures. I was, like, again, upset no one was there to see how happy I was. And I was like, does anybody want to just capture pure joy on my face? So,
it's a joyful moment. I agree with you. I wasn't expecting to see monkeys there, but I had seen them in Bali. Like, one of the stories in my show centers around the fact that I got bit by one in Bali. And
That's where my story is. Super continue.
Oh, no, go. I was just going to say, I
want to hear about you almost dying.
Sorry?
Did you have to go somewhere because you got bit by a wild monkey?
Well, yeah, see, that in the end, because rabies is really new to Bali.
is it? It's the new thing.
2008 was the first instance of rabies in Bali. And like prior to that, they just never, I think it was dogs that got brought in that had it. And before that, they just never had a case of it. So I was sort of like, the monkey, he wasn't like frothing at the mouth. So I'm feeling...
So you didn't go anywhere?
Eventually, but not straight away. And I was just like, if I feel any symptoms, we're going straight to a doctor.
Sure.
But
you're crazy.
No.
That's crazy.
No. But you're saying you got bit of...
So I was...
Go.
No, I didn't. No. So I was going up the steps. I'm taking pictures. And like I said, my parents are vets. I know enough not to get in their face. So there's this baby monkey. And I would think logically everyone knows not to pet any baby, whether it's a human or an animal, because the mother's going to be protective. Like, if I had a baby and some stranger started petting my baby, I would also bite them. Like, get the fuck away from me. I don't know you.
I think that's reasonable.
So this woman, white woman, but not, she didn't speak English. I don't think she actually even understood what I said. But she goes to pet this baby monkey. And I'm like, are you fucking insane? Like, literally, it just comes out of my mouth. Are you fucking crazy? Out of nowhere, the mama monkey, like, jumps down, hisses, and swats at her. The woman starts laughing. Laughing!
Wrong response. Oh.
And I was like, I literally was like, are you fucking dumb? Like, are you crazy? And I was just like, I don't think she understood me. I mean, she didn't even look back. I was just like, I can't right now. I just, like, cannot right now. Like,
she either just assumed you were also having a great time because there was monkeys, or...
But, like, and then you also see these girls, like, putting their faces close to monkeys and taking selfies. Like, I'm just like, what are you... Dude, they're all stupid. Like,
stories about, you know, the people who hand raise monkeys being attacked.
I think their faces ripped off. Like, people are just dumb. Everybody's dumb. But it was one of those. So I remember I went to get, like, bubble tea later that day, and I was walking around, and I was, like, talking to the guy at the bubble tea place, and I was just like, I know I'm a tourist, and I'm white, but these white tourists are so dumb. And he was, like, on the floor laughing as I'm talking about, like, I think the girl was, like, Italian or something. I was like, she's gonna die. I was like, those are her life skills. I can't.
It's fantastic. Well, see, stuff like that is quite interesting, because, like, when I arrived in Malaysia, there was this dude who was in the hostel that I was staying in, and he just never left our room. Occasionally, he would be, like, at the desk helping, but he didn't actually work for the hostel. And I found out like a day before I left, that his first day in Malaysia, he got kidnapped and had managed to escape. And that every second day, he had gone up onto the roof because so many people were asking him about it. And apparently, he had like a really natural, good storytelling position. And he was really sort of funny. And that every second day, he'd go up onto the roof of the hostel and just regale people with the tale because he was sick of telling it over and over again. But I didn't find out that until I was leaving. So I never got to hear his whole story. I just found out from someone else in the hostel that, yeah, this white dude had been kidnapped his first day in Malaysia and had managed to escape. And I've never
got
a satisfying...
And then but he didn't leave? Like, I'm sorry, if I get kidnapped and I escape, I'm leaving.
Yeah, absolutely, straight away. You would leave the country, right? He just stayed...
How old was he that he got kidnapped? Or was he just, like, malnutritioned and easy to pick up?
He would have been in his, let's see, at most he would have been in his late 20s.
Shit.
Yeah.
That's why you don't talk to anybody but monkeys. Right. I didn't talk to anybody but the bubble tea people and monkeys. That was my whole, and I guess the audiences.
Yeah.
You know, there's a safe distance.
But they came to you, like, you know, you weren't seeking them out. They were like, oh yeah, we'll go see some comedy. Guys over from the stage.
Yeah, and I was like, you guys stay in your chairs, I'll be over here.
Yeah, don't, anyone steps closer and we are done. This evening
is
over.
Yeah, the only way you can get closer to me is if you have some kind of animal.
And even then, just send the animal. And
I would definitely, even in my 30s, be somebody that gets picked up in a van because someone has a kitten. Like, I have not learned that lesson.
But it's better than candy, though, because the lesson's always, don't go near strangers with candy. And you're like, no, I know that. I've learned that lesson. But this guy had a kitten, you know?
This guy, yeah. And it'd be so funny, because I would get there and I'd be like, hey, where's this kitten? God damn it. This happens to me.
Again. Oh, that's fantastic. All right. I'm going to change the batteries on my Zoom here. So that might be a good place to put a pause on this part. And then when we come back, we can do just the little recommendations bit, the other half.
Sounds good.
Do one sec. Nice. I might start us off with someone who I found out about in Comedy Fest.
I grew up in kind of a strange family because that's what people have told me. I grew up in Ponsonby, thank you. Stop it. No, don't bring it up. I grew up in Ponsonby, and my parents, they were, like, extremely politicized from a young age, and so my mum, she had, outside of our house, her own homemade political billboard that she used to write her own slogans on. Yeah, that's right. And sometimes they were great, and they hit the nail on the head. They were beautiful. And at other times, they were completely nonsensical. Like, I remember one time during the George Bush administration, if I can cast your mind back to the good old days. She had a sign up that said, don't be ambushed. Yeah, which is about the reaction that was met with by the public at large. You see, George Bush wasn't exactly at the forefront of most people's minds. So from their perspective, they're walking through a lovely neighborhood when they see a sign that says, don't be ambushed. It's very disconcerting, and people used to stand around the sign looking up at it, trying to figure out what it meant, which always pissed me off, because listen, it doesn't matter where you are, if you see a sign that says, don't be ambushed, move on. Don't hang around to find out what it means. And it used to piss my mum off too, because she'd lean out the top story of our house, that's a brag, and she'd yell down at them, she'd say, it means... don't be ambushed. It means don't be ambushed. It means don't be ambushed. Until she'd get so worked up that she'd go down and confront them in person, thus making the sign actually serve a purpose of warning people about my mother. It was a full self-fulfilling prophecy. One time, one Christmas, she tried her hand at religious satire. Yeah. Believe me when I say I used that word, that term generously. She drew the outline of Bethlehem, which is the birthplace of the Christian Messiah, our Lord Jesus Christ. That's not a laugh line. I'll let you know. She drew an outline of Bethlehem, and from it, she did a speech bubble saying, "It's a girl." So what she was trying to infer was that the Messiah could be a woman, but what the neighbourhood thought was that she just had another baby. And everyone sent flowers.
Found a few, like, New Zealand TV spots that she's done as well, and they're, you know, in more in the vein of like correspondence, like Daily Show correspondent type pieces, which really gets to the heart of a lot of things. But I think she's quite obviously the storytelling nature of that is such a the audience with like very distinct story, but it just it. I think everyone has a relative that they're a little embarrassed about.
Yeah, no, I felt like, you know, my family's not political, it's not relatable to me at all, but she made you understand how uncomfortable and awkward and weird her mother came across, but maybe at the same time how proud she was of her. It didn't feel like she was... It didn't feel like she was, like, throwing her mom completely under the bus. She was basically being like, you know, sometimes, you know, they made sense, and many times she scared people.
She was passionate. Yeah, so, like, the passion, but... So, do you have a preference on who you'd like to...
Yeah, let's go lady for lady. I'll do Adrian Appalachian, who's, there's a bias. She's a really, really good friend of mine. She's known in the city, in New York, as, like, one of the best writers. Like, she's just a brilliant writer, and, I think what you're going to play is a little old. So her stuff has only gotten stronger and more relevant. I mean, she's the type of person that writes a school shooting joke right after a school shooting, which isn't that big of a deal because we have them every 3 days. She's just a strong writer and just really quick, and I think she's like no one else.
Please, how about a nice warm welcome for Adrian Appalachian.
Thank you. I was dating this guy, and within the first week, he decided to open up to me. So he told me that his mother said he was her biggest mistake. And I thought that was kind of harsh. And then the more I got to know him, I was like, never doubt a mother's intuition. She knows if she's putting out a shoddy product. Me and my own mother don't really get along that well, which is kind of awkward because I live in her basement apartment. We got into a fight the other day and I called her and actually heard her walk over to the phone, see it was me calling, and then walk away. I ran into one of my friend's parents that I haven't seen since high school, and she was like, you know, Deborah's married now and expecting her second baby. What have you been up to? And I was like, I finished a whole chapstick. Because in my head, anybody can get married and knocked up a couple of times, but you try keeping track of a chapstick. For 6 to 9 months, it's pretty challenging. All I'm saying is it doesn't cry when it's lost. I'm gonna open up to you guys, I'm not really a people person. I was in the elevator the other day and I was eating a bag of baby carrots. And this guy was like, those are really good for your eyes. And I was like, I know, I used to be blind. Freedom of speech is amazing because you can pretty much say anything with a couple of exceptions. Like, you can't go into a theater and yell fire, but you can go up to each person individually and say, I hope your house burns down. So you just kind of have to know how to work the system. People are really upset with Obama. They're like, he keeps going on vacation while our unemployment rate is so high. I'm like, well, he's allowed to go on vacation. He has a job. Whenever somebody tells me they just got back from vacation, I always say the same thing. I'm like, you look really tan. Unless they're black, then I'm like, you look well rested. I'm not gonna make that mistake again. I called into my job the other day. I was like, I'm not gonna be able to come in today. My dad died. And they were like, Adrian, your dad died 5 years ago. And I was like, I didn't say when he died. I just said he died and I'm gonna need some time off. Like, how do they know that's not still affecting me? There's no statute of limitations on sad. Maybe I just miss my dad the most between the hours of 9 to 5. Sometimes when I'm at work, I'll think about how they say immigrants are coming to this country and taking all our jobs. And I'm just like, when are they gonna take my job? Like, I'll just be sitting at my desk looking at my watch like, ugh, where is this guy? Feminists too, which is weird because they're always complaining. They're like, we only make 70 cents for every dollar a man makes. And I'm like, look, I'm only doing like 40 cents worth of work. Like, the way I look at it, they're overpaying me. I just feel like if you're upset that you're not making more money, just do less work. I actually seen two female cops working together the other day, and instead of being like, look how progressive we become as a society, I was just like, I bet one of their partners called in sick. Like, that morning, the lieutenant was just like, all right, guys, Davis is not coming in today. So we're just going to put Aaron and Heather together and hope nothing real happens. And now I know that's messed up, but I'm saying that as a woman. Like, if I call 911 up and two women show up, I'm just going to be like, I could have just done this myself. This is great. Now all three of us are going to get robbed.
Well, that was a treat. She's great.
She's amazing. She's just, she always has a unique perspective to everything. She always, she's just kind of brutally honest. Like, she has this, I think it's here too, but there's a tax on tampons. There's a luxury tax on tampons, and they're trying to finally take it off. And she's just like, cool. She's like, because that's why I don't own a house. She's like, And she just goes, she's like, okay, so, you know, I save all the money from all the tax I'm not paying. Over the next 10 years, I put in a high yield fund. In 15 years, I can buy a box of tampons. Like, she just has, like, a really, like, it's a very negative, but also a very brutally honest and fearless perspective. And she just, she makes me laugh all the time.
Yeah. No, I can see that. That's, it's built into, like, even just those tiny little tags on the jokes, like, but they're very clever. Everything that she was bringing, and it was sort of like, even though she, at least having fun with being stupid with the solutions. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
You know, you can sort of, it's a way of bringing it out to people and highlighting. I like it.
She, I'm gonna butcher this joke, but like talking about it, like she's a huge animal lover, so she has a dog, she has up two dogs, and like, I mean, we basically just send animal memes to each other. But she had this old joke, I don't even think she does it anymore, and it was like my favorite. But she's like, you know, for all these people that like used to own lions, she's like, I don't think, like, it never ends well. Like, it never ends with, yeah, and then he died in my arms. Like, it's like, it seems kind of stupid to own a wild animal, and it's just like, she just, every time she says anything, she kills me. She truly does.
But even as a truncated version of that,
Yeah, no, she's very, like, her, she can be very, like, she's a little more one-liner because it's late right there, but even her, like, you know, one-liners on stage, like, she tells, like, a full story in such a short amount of time.
Yeah.
Which is very, very visual.
Packed a lot of, just narrative, what was happening in board. Just get real.
Yeah.
I mean, it's...
I'm hoping she has an album or a special out soon. She has people.
Yeah, I mean,
if
that's the case, now that I'm aware of who she is, I'll sort of try and keep her on. Very strong. I'd love to see
her.
I'd love to see her.
Follow on Twitter.
Okay, yeah, great. I will. What's her Twitter handle for people if they are interested? Do you know?
She spells her name. Her name's all Italian and weird. I'll give it to you.
Because if it's just her name, I've got it here. That's LAPALUCCI.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Alright, cool. All right, easy.
And it's not an L, it's an I.
It's an I. It's a capital.
Yeah,
of course it is. Yeah. Because it's part of the name, because that's how letters work.
Yeah.
Yep, no, I know letters. I'm familiar with them. Right. cool. No, I love it. She's great. Well, hour from her. Like, because that's one thing that I always find interesting with... strong comedians, regardless of what style they're doing, is seeing their, you know, 6, 8, whatever, 5 minutes translate to an hour, because it's such a different journey. Like, even one-liner comedians, like, watching someone sustain one-lines for an hour, that's a journey. That's a whole journey in and of itself. It can be really taxing if they don't do it right. So just seeing how they sustain that style or sustain that power.
Absolutely.
I've got, to move us forward, I've got one of my favourite Australian comedians, and I don't think I could have not talked about it. I try to keep up with whatever she's doing. I don't know if you've heard of her, Alice Fraser. She's fantastic. She's in a very similar vein. She's like smart and has a sort of unique... but she's just very switched on, and I kind of feel like everything she does lands really well. Like, some of her festival shows have been really strong festival shows. Like, she did a whole show that was about the death of her mother, and it was incredibly funny, but, like, very moving at the same time, and it sort of toted that line really well. It sat perfectly in the festival market. It would be hard to to market anywhere else, and like, she wouldn't be able to take it to clubs, I don't think. But she managed to make it work, which was incredible. So I'll play this one for you.
Delight to be here. I will tell you some things about myself. I was brought up Buddhist, so my dad's side of the family is Jewish, my mom's side of the family is Catholic. They met in the late 70s, so I was born and brought up Buddhist. It means I'm oppressed, repressed, and depressed. It means I have all of the shit, man. I have the Jewish neuroses, I have the guilt of the Catholics, but I am at one with it. I have all of the aggression of centuries of oppression running through my blood, but I don't like hurting people's feelings. I'm like, eat a dick, I hope it's delicious. Get out of my way, I'm walking here. But what is walking? What is being but a temporary coexistence of mind and matter? I don't get a lot done. I think context is important, right? Context is important. Where something is important, right? I lost my Kindle the other day and I found it hiding in a book. Who's saying something matters, how they're saying it, where they're saying it. You can be saying goodbye to a friend at night. You could say goodnight or goodbye and they mean essentially the same thing. If you roll over in bed and say goodbye instead of goodnight, that is a threat. What else about me? Oh, I was in a bathroom the other day and someone knocked on the door and I panicked and said, come in. I can't stand it when online forms tell you to prove you're not a robot, because then you have to go off and live a full, passionate life, love intensely, suffer deeply, eventually die, and by then your Amazon login screen's timed out. There's this fantastic thing that happened in Ireland this year, and it was just an out-of-context thing. It was at Christmas, and two men got married, and they were two straight men, right? And they were friends, an older man, a younger man. The older man said to the younger man, look after me until I die, and in exchange, I will give you my house. And the younger man said, cool, but tax was prohibitive, so they got married. And the right wing is furious about it. They're like, this is the slippery slope we were talking about. If you let gay men get married, now straight men have to get married. And the loveless marriage for the purposes of a land transaction is the most traditional marriage there is. I cannot believe we're living in a time in history when the right wing is angry that two men are not fucking. The beautiful thing, my favourite thing about that story has nothing to do with marriage. After they got married, they went to the church, the Catholic church, to light some candles, and the priest came and congratulated them. As they walked out of the church, some journalists asked them the question, and the younger man said, oh no, neither of us are Catholic. He just likes lighting candles. I was talking to a friend of mine. I have a friend who's a very right-wing friend. He's very right-wing. I keep him round to pretend I'm not in a liberal bubble. That's his function. He was talking to me the other day. He's talking about how men and women are really different. Oh, men are different from women. He should have been a stand-up comedian in the 90s. And he said this to me. He said, you know, although women attempt suicide at higher rates than men, men achieve suicide at four times the rate of women. He said, you know, that's proof that men are better at getting shit done. He's always talking about how men are rational and women are hormonal. Men are rational, women are hormonal. I'm like, mate, you know you have hormones too. Like, of course, women have hormones. Men also have. If you do not believe that men have hormones, wait outside a pub on a Saturday night. Just wait for two men to roll out and having some fist fight about something neither of them cares about. No one ever got three punches into that fight and was like, oh, actually, good point. Logically consistent, my good man. I like to go up to those men outside pubs on a Saturday night and be like, a bit hormonal, are we? A little bit testerical, boop. And then you run, you've got to run. It's super important to run. You have been absolutely lovely. I'm Alice Fraser. Enjoy the rest of your night.
Always find her a complete. Like she's a.
She sounds like a pixie. She just sounds, she sounds like so full of energy.
Yeah, I can see that. She consistently keeping a high energy, which I think must be hard over some of the the work that I've seen her do. I really respect that she's sort of coming into such a tough industry and such a sort of male-dominated industry, and just she's not sort of afraid to just speak out and just be like, nah, she did like a whole thing about, like a lot of people did a whole thing about Me Too in this year's festival, but I feel like a lot of them just were toting a fine line where she ended up going to an interesting place with it. Like actually got exploratory and not only being sort of probably the most qualified person to speak about it, you know, having spoken from personal experience, from what I can remember of the story, but then twisted it and turned it into a strange parody of the Joker. You know, the... No, not the Joker. What's the song called? You know, that you gotta know when to hold them. That song. About people getting their dick out. I think it was quite a fun little way to sort of make it stick into people's brains. And it's not just a lecture. And it became an experience that people sort of really enjoyed. But I can understand, like, that energy that she came into that set was very high indeed.
I think for TV you have to be in a lot of ways. I mean, Adrian's is very low energy, and that's, I think, a harder thing to maintain with a lot of people.
Yeah. That's fair. Like, audiences, I guess, when they're on TV, they have an expectation. Like, if you're not making them laugh at a time, or if they get to the punchline, then they start to stop paying attention, to lose focus. Especially if they're just at home and they've got 1,000 other distractions. But you want to do... We got one last one. We can finish this one up. So, you got Nora Davis.
Yeah, then I'm gonna have to run that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Rory, I've started with Rory, he's brilliant. I think he just taped his half hour special for Comedy Central, and he's done the show on HBO called Two Dope Queens, and
yeah.
I think he has two albums out. Like, I think he's just an extremely unique voice on top of just a lovely person.
New York, and I'm single. I know, well, it's hard being single when you look like you're 7 years old. Like, I talk to women, but they never take me serious. Because they always think I'm just some black kid trying to sell candy for his basketball team. Like, I'm woke. I try not to be too woke. And if you're older here and you don't know what woke means, it basically means you see the glass as half empty or half full of water, and I see it as Flint still doesn't have clean water. That's it. Let's talk. Like, I'm conscious, I help my boys with toxic masculinity. I got one of those homies that's like, yeah, I'm a man. I'm a man. Look, all you have to do is be a good person. That's all you have to do. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was his birthday, I got him a cake. I was like, yo, happy birthday. But he was like, he's such a man. He was like, why you give me this cake? You think I like cakes or something? But I saw the twinkle in his eye. The twinkle in his eye was like, thank you so much. Y'all really love me. How you print my picture on this cake? How you do that? It's like, just cry. It's, fellas, you have to cry. If you don't cry, you gonna kill somebody. Like, I'm not only heterosexual black man who has gay friends. I'm trying to get my boys to broaden their horizon, because, like, gay people are dope. I'll tell you one thing, they have a better time on Instagram. My gay friends, they was on Instagram, they went pumpkin picking. I wanna go. I can't get my straight friends to go pumpkin picking. Yo, Trey, let's go pumpkin picking. There's gonna be any girls there? Why does that have to be the objective? Let's just go. We look at some orange shades, we take some selfies, we get our likes up, that's it. Ain't no girls, I ain't going. Oh, that's your only premise? That's toxic masculinity's premise. Get girls, get drunk. Get girls, get drunk. You know, one time my boy was like, yo, let's go to an Usher concert. I'm like, why? We don't like Usher. He's like, nah, but there's gonna be mad girls there. Yeah, but they there for Usher. They not there for us. What type of logic is that? Hey, girl, you can't get him, but look at me. like I'm conscious on hip-hop, like I love hip-hop, but we all know sometimes it's misogynistic, and I think it's because of the male ego. Like, I don't like when rappers like, yo, I stole your girl. No, you didn't. I was whack and she went to you. Stop acting like she didn't walk over there. She has legs. It takes away woman's choice. Like, if you stole my girl, that's kidnapping. That's a whole other song. That's a whole other track. I gotta listen to the song for the ransom. Got your girl in the club, 50 grand. Jalissa, you out there? Please hit me back on the gram. I don't know where you went. I don't know which Migos took her. Look, I'm not political, but I do worry about this country's uprise of white supremacy. And as a black man, I'm not even angry. I'm just exhausted. I'm like, what do they want? What do they want? Like, you lost a long time ago. Just let diversity in. Just let love and diversity in, because I'm not going back. I have too many sneakers. I'm not going back. You know how much shipping would cost? I put all my sneakers on the cargo ship to Africa, then they get lost at sea. Now I'm in Africa with loafers. I'm not doing that. I'm wearing my Yeezys here. Look, and I don't hate them because they want that divide between us. We all the same. They want that divide. No, look, I know, look, this country's built on 500 years of oppression. We built this country's wealth for free, slavery. But I don't walk around freaking white supremacists, freaking white people. No, I just don't believe in paying back student loans. That's it. That's it. That's my reparations. Every time they hit me up, I just put a cotton ball in the envelope, send it right to them. Did you get my payment? Because I got more cotton. Keep calling me from a number I don't recognize, I'll send more cotton. Once I figure out the Venmo cotton, it's a wrap.
I do love him. He's so good.
He's so funny. And he just, I don't know, he's able to talk about, like, political things without it being preachy, which I really appreciate about him.
Yeah.
Like, you think about all the topics that we hit, which is, like, toxic masculinity and racism and, like, supremacy and, you know, our country changing. And, like, he does it all so seamlessly from, like, a personal perspective without it being, it's just all very funny and smart and thoughtful.
Yeah, it doesn't become, like, you're wrong and I'm attacking you. It becomes... this is, like, how I've witnessed it, and this is how I'm seeing it, and
almost showing you how silly your perspective is for having it.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely.
Like, tricking you into believing, into coming around being like, oh yeah, that is dumb.
Yeah, like, what is the end game of white supremacy? What, you want me to go back to Africa? Like, I can't afford that shipping. You know what I mean? Like, the fact that he has too many sneakers, I just think it's so funny and smart, and even the way he approaches, like, just dudes. Like, I love that he's able to be, like, this sensitive dude where he's just like, you know,
yeah,
let's go pumpkin picking. And everybody like, this girl is there. And it's like, why does that have to be the objective? Why is that always, why can't we just go pick pumpkins? And it's like, I mean, hearing that from a guy is like, it's just so refreshing.
It is. It's very refreshing. To hear someone admit to just being like, I just like picking fruit. It's nice.
Yeah.
A nice activity.
Yeah, we take, and just in the comparison to gay guys, they're having a great time on Instagram. Why can't that be us?
Yeah. That's two work, right? That's from that album? Is that right?
It might be, yeah. I haven't listened to a second album, but I'm sure it is.
Yeah, no, it's a strong pace. Like, it's all altogether conceptually very amazing, and I think it just goes a long way to bringing people around and to sort of just helping facilitate those conversations, even if it just, I guess the best way to go at it is to approach it with an absurdist angle and just be like, see, this is dumb. This isn't going to
happen. Yeah, he has a transgender sibling, so his sister became his brother, And he talks about it, and again, it's just really thoughtful and refreshing in a unique perspective, and he makes it really funny. And I think there's more and more transgender comedians talking about clearly their perspective, but it coming from a black male talking about it as a sibling, and just how it's both really heartwarming and thoughtful and smart and interesting. So like, he has a joke where he goes, my brother now left the closet and then just walked right into mine, like he's constantly wearing my clothes, and it's not okay. Like, I support your dreams, but don't touch my stuff. Like,
oh, thank you so much for your time.
I really
appreciate you giving me so much time. Just quickly for people, if they want to follow up on you anywhere, where should they go?
Everything is on our website, LizMeary.com, M-I-E-L-E. Everything, social media is at LizMeary. Again, Instagram is all cat pictures, so follow at your own risk. I don't know when you're putting this out, but I will be headlining at the Comedy Store in Sydney on Saturday, February 9th, and then I'm headlining in Brisbane the 15th and the 16th, and then I'm headlining at the Comics Lounge in Melbourne the 20th to the 23rd.
Cool. Now I'll try and get it out in the next like day or two. I'm just going to do a little bit of editing. It's usually pretty quick. But so people should check that out. Thank you so much again. And that's it. Thank you.
All right, we made it to the end. Thank you so much, those of you who stuck around beyond listening to our wonderful guest speak. I had a really good time interviewing her. It was a lot of fun. She's very informative, and I just think, like, she just seems like just a genuinely lovely lady. And we're going to end the episode with a very similar vein to the beginning, where we're going to finish with the song New York, but this time with Alicia Keys and Jay-Z. It's that mix. It's a great song. It's a great mix, and don't tell me you don't enjoy it. It was huge. It was everywhere, and I know it's probably been a while since you've listened to it, so just sit back and chill out and listen to it. If you get the chance, go see Liz. Don't forget, she's on all the social media, so hit her up. Tell her you enjoyed her on this show, or, you know, speak to us and let us know which guests you've enjoyed, because we'd love to have them back. If you really enjoyed a particular guest and want to hear from them again, let us know. We'll get them right back in. Yeah, you know, their schedule's pending. But check out our guests, check out our live shows, and please tell others, rate us, just be nice. Generally be nice. Thanks so much for hanging around. Enjoy the song, and I'll see you hopefully at a live show. See ya.
Yeah, I'm up at Brooklyn, now I'm down in Tribeca, right next to De Niro, but I'll be hood forever. I'm the new Sinatra, and since I made it here, I can make it anywhere. Yeah, they love me everywhere. I used to cop in Harlem, all of my Dominicanos right there up on Broadway. Brought me back to that McDonald's, took it to my stash spot, 560 State Street. Catch me in the kitchen like a Simmons whipping pastry. Cruising down 8th Street, off-white Lexus, driving so slow, but BK is from Texas. Me, I'm up at Bed-Stuy, home of that boy Biggie. Now I live on Billboard, and I brought my boys with me. Say what up to Tata, still sipping my tea, sitting courtside, Knicks and Nets give me high fives. Nigga, I be spiked out, I can trip a referee. Tell by my attitude that I'm most definitely from
New York, concrete jungle, yeah. Dreams are made.
Catch me at the X.
dance with OG at the Yankee game. Shit, I made the Yankee hat more famous than a Yankee can. You should know I bleed blue, but I ain't a crypto. But I got a gang of niggas walking with my click though. Welcome to the melting pot, corners where we selling rock. African Bambaataa shit, home of the hip hop. Yellow cap, gypsy cap, dollar cap, holler back for foreigners. Say they fair, they act like they forgot how to act. 8 million stories out there and they naked. City is a pretty, half of y'all won't make it. Me, I got a blood special and I got it made. If Jesus paying LeBron, I'm paying Dwayne Wade. Three dice CeeLo, three card Marley. Labor Day parade, rest in peace Bob Marley. Statue of Liberty, long live the World Trade, long live the King, yo. I'm from the Empire State. That's
New York, concrete jungle where dreams are made.
Is blinding. Girls need blinders so they can step out of bounds quick. The sidelines is blind with casualties who sip in life casually then gradually become worse. Don't bite the apple Eve. Caught up in the in crowd. Now you're in style. And in the winter gets cold and vogue with your skin out. The city of sin. It's a pity on a whim. Good girls gone bad. The city's filled with them. Mommy took a bus trip. Now she got a bust out. Everybody ride her just like a bus route. Hail Mary to the city. You're a virgin. And Jesus can't save you. Life starts when the church ends. Came here for school, graduated to the high life. Ball players, rap stars, addicted to the limelight. MDMA got you feeling like a champion. The city never sleeps, better slip you an Ambien.
New York, concrete jungle where dreams are made. Your light is in the air, everybody say yeah, yeah.